The following song, music, and poetics is being presented by Mr. Allen Ginsberg, Ms. Ann Waldman, Mr. Stephen Taylor, and Ms. Bobby Louise Hawkins at the Naropa Institute in Boulder, Colorado on July 13, 1987.
Will be Bobby Louise Hawkins. Bobby.
This particular new work, can you hear me? No. Both? Huh? Is that better?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. Hey. Good. I'm going to do a couple of, I've been doing a one-woman show of monologues in the Bay Area, and the last couple of years, and I've been living in London, and I've been doing it there. I'm going to do a couple of pieces from that. And let me see, is someone sitting here who's going to show me when it's great. This old boy where I grew up, A.T. Tyson, he went to New York, and he turned into a painter. A picture painter. And he bought a farm in Texas. He got a lot of money. He got real rich. He come back, he bought a farm there. Of course, he didn't farm it or anything. He had a family live there. So ever so often, he'd come back there, you know, and he'd bring friends with him from New York, and they'd hang out in that farmhouse like, and look ratty, you know, like farmers. And to look at him, you couldn't tell that he was a rich man. I mean, he traipsed around that place in these ratty old Levi's with paint all over him. There was this old woman, Ms. Alley, drove around in an electric Cadillac. One day she come by his place, and he was out there. The county had just put a rule through, said you had to paint your name and your number on your mailboxes. So he decided to really do it up, and he was standing out there looking like some kind of transient tramp, painting up his mailbox with flowers and all these colors, and she comes driving by, and she hits the brakes, and she thinks it's just some guy passing through, you know. She says, "How much do you charge for doing that?" He decides to take it on, and he traipses across the street, says, "I got letters this size that are 25 cents a piece, and I got letters that size, and they're 35 cents a piece." So she shoves her card at him and says, "What did you charge me for putting that on my mailbox?" And he looked at it and said, "Well, that'd be about $11.32. She said, "How about $11 even?" And he didn't say anything. She said, "Well, I'm the third mailbox down on the right. You won't miss it because I live in the big house that sits up on the hill that has the porch all the way around. And if you want to come over there tomorrow morning, don't bother coming up to the house because I've got friends from Lubbock. And we're going to have a late breakfast. And when you're done, you come up and I'll pay you." So the next morning, she's sitting out on the porch with her friends down there by the mailbox. There drives up this Rolls Royce. And it stops. A chauffeur gets out, all dressed up in chauffeur drag. He goes around the Rolls Royce. He opens up all the doors, see. Out of the other seat on the in the front, there gets this butler dressed like a butler, carrying an ice bucket and some bottles of champagne in it, you know. Out of the back seat comes these two women dressed like they're right out of Vogue magazine. So those two men, they spread down a tarp. Those two women go over and they sit on these fold-out chairs and they hold these glasses and they pop the champagne and they pour champagne. And here comes old A.T. Tyson out of the back seat looking like a tramp. Heads over to the mailbox and starts to paint on it, and every stroke of the brush he makes, those women go, "Ooh." Of course, up on the porch, they're just slack-jawed. So he finishes, you know. And the butler and the chauffeur start gathering up the stuff, and they put it all back in the car. And old A.T. Tyson comes traipsing up the hill and goes over to Ms. Alley and says, "That'll be $11. He says, "Even." So she gives him a check for $11. And about 2 weeks later, she gets this letter from his gallery in New York saying they're going to have a show of A.T. Tyson occasional pieces. And they'd sure like to borrow her mailbox. So she wrapped it up in tissue paper and she sent it to him, you know. When she got it back, she didn't put it down on the post. She put it in her living room. Everybody that come into the house after that, she'd say, "That's my A.T. Tyson occasional piece." I'm working on a... I'm working on a book I've taken through so many drafts. Hearing it called new is a real problem. I feel like I'm passing. Because I've taken it through 9 drafts. Every time I tell friends of mine, "Oh, I've decided to work on that some more," they just groan. But I thought I'd do a few pieces from it. The title of it is Total Recall. And it actually, this part out of it is... takes place in Guatemala about 20 years ago. Don Alessandro has shot himself in the leg again. This time, the bullet went into a bone and stripped the marrow all the way down as it went. It's more serious this time. He is again in the hospital, his leg in a cast, and his wife, who was driven from the hospital before she even reached the door, has come to Helen to be consoled. "The children were with me," she was saying when Antonio came into the room, as they are now, 2 small boys, round-eyed, watching their mother cry. "And still he stuck his head from the window and screamed at me, 'Go home.' He screamed, 'Go home, you whore. Go home, you bitch.' And the children heard it all. She has saved his life 2 now, dragged him semi-conscious to a jeep, and driven him blood pouring to the doctor in Tapalapa, and from there to the city, to the hospital. Don Alessandro was a German, but he should have been a Latin. He carried the burden of machismo. He spoke loudly because of it, and carried a revolver in his hip holster. 'If one carries a gun,' he rightly thought, 'one should be proficient with it.' He practiced quick draws in his bedroom before the mirror and shot himself in the leg the 1st time and was saved by his wife. And if one wears a gun and has shown oneself to be a fool with it, shooting oneself in the leg, there is then the further problem. One wants only a proper respect. Drinking beer in a small shop in Kishaya, if one wants the radio turned down and the shopkeeper dawdles about it, one must wave one's gun in the air and with a proper flourish shoot the radio off its shelf, as Don Alessandro had done, successfully. But the finger should not be near the trigger when the gun is returned to its holster, or one is again shot in the leg. It is hard to be such a man," his wife said. This piece is called Doing Psychology. I got the house, and I got the car, which she tooled expertly out of the parking lot, holding the steering wheel with the pads of her hands, the fingers extended, nails too long to be curled under. Well, I needed it. I couldn't go looking for a job or go to school or do anything without my car. I sure didn't intend to just sit in that damned house and go loony. Not with him off on a honeymoon in Bermuda. And I got alimony, and I got child support. Getting the house means the kids get to go to the same school, but that house really takes keeping up. And if I decide to sell it, he gets half the profit. How about that? I can see me doing that. Well, I never would have let him have the kids. He'd have had a fight on his hands if he tried that. Her ex-husband had married his 23-year-old secretary, and they had returned from Bermuda to live in a swingers condominium. Fighting for the kids seemed to me to be remote from his plans. I asked her whether she wanted to be a writer. We were returning to the city from a reading I'd given at the local university, and she had attended with a group from the university's writing workshop. Oh, yes, I don't know yet what kind of thing I want to write, so I take all the writing courses. And grammar. I've been doing a lot of grammar. And psychology. I do a lot of psychology. Do you do a lot of psych? I mean, did you do a lot of psychology when you were beginning to get the motivation straight and stuff? It seems to me that your work has a lot of psychology in it. Well, not much. I like William James and some Jung. Not like studying it. Carl Jung. Yes, my favorite. I take from this professor that loves Freud, Sigmund Freud. He wants me to go to Europe with him on his sabbatical. That's next year. Vienna and Switzerland. What do you think of Switzerland and Vienna? It sounds exciting. I've never been to Vienna or Switzerland. You've never been to Europe. Oh, I've been to some places in Europe, but I've never been to Vienna or Switzerland. Where have you been? Oh, England, Holland, Germany. Does he want to go to the Aranus lectures in Switzerland? What's that? Well, the Jungians get together and deliver papers to each other on some topic. Oh, no, he just likes Freud. He wants to work on, you know, how Freud said everything is sex. You know about that. I mean, the creative impulse. Freud says if you don't have enough sex, it interferes with your creative impulse. Of course, there's two streams of thought on that. Well, this professor's interested in how it is the other way around. What happens to the creative impulse when there's too much sex? Well, maybe just enough, but does it interfere or what? What do you think? Do you think too much sex would interfere with the creative impulse, or do you think it might help it along? Hard to say. There are only so many hours in the day. Oh, yes, well, that's true. That's an interesting way to think about it. So he wants me to help him research this other angle, the too much sex angle. He says nobody's done hardly anything on that. I call this middle-aged white woman stardust rap. I just started noticing all this dub and rap stuff, and I just thought, my God, that sounds like back home around the table when nobody'll shut up, and I can do that. In my ongoing program of flashing in the world as a middle-aged white woman, I've learned that if I can do it, I'd better. My noticing it probably means the whole genre's on its way out, because in the big trickle-down of who notices what when, by the time it gets to me, it's like chili dogs and root beer at the drive-in. But there's all this stuff that makes you look better than you are, so my shopping lists are starting to read eggs, milk, bread, pitch transposer, minute steaks, red snapper, donuts, croissant, vocoder, and a Casio sampler, if I can afford it after my groceries. So then I need a rhythm, and I thought, well, what the hell? Stardust has always been a showstopper. That was always the last dance just before the last dance. The last dance was usually goodnight, ladies, or goodnight, sweetheart. So Stardust was always meaningful, and they'd drop the lights and start cha-boom, 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 boom, boom. Cha-boom, 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 cha-boom. High up in the sky, the little stars shine. Thank you.
Our next reader, Anne Waldman, author of Fast Speaking Woman, Journals and Dreams, Makeup on Empty Space, Invention, Skin, Meat, Bones, most recently the romance thing. She is our director here at Naropa Poetics, a fearless leader, takes care of everybody. Her shamanship with her poetry has spanned the globe. Earlier this year in Nicaragua, she was called El Diablita amongst the Nicaraguan poets. She's a member of the Nicaraguan Cultural Alliance and also a member of the Committee on International Poetry. Anne Waldman.
This is Stephen Taylor here. To my right, we're going to do Contra Chant. Contra Chant. Contra, contra, contradiction. Contra, contra, contradiction. Contra, contra, contrapunto. The music in this case all wrong. La musica en este caso equivocado. Contra, contra, contra tiempo. Contra, contra, contra tiempo. The time in this case all wrong. El tiempo en este caso equivocado. Contra, contra. Contrabando. Contra, contra, contrabando. The drug smuggling in this case. All wrong. Contract, contract. The deals in this case. Lieutenant Colonels, all wrong. Contra, contra, contradiction. Contra, contra, contradiction. Back off, contra, back off, contra, back off, contra. Atrás, contra, atrás, contra. Thank you, Stephen. entitled Buddhist Elegy. All I know is sitting here breathing inside a capacious heart. No way out, dazzling strange. And the teacher who spoke many beautiful things rests in every pore and optical nerve. He is dead. It is witnessed his heart stayed warm a long time. See through his heart, his eyes now. Not blind alley faith to know this truth, but appreciate human brilliant sanity. I need to know a way, not by war or pestilence, but big heart way. The elders speak. The room is silent, but for a song of seed syllables. Incense is the continuity of smell this fragrant world. Death rides here too all the time and has many dark faces, hag mouth, hag teeth, hag flesh, reminders of sweet impermanence, and now sit down with his burnt bones of black coral made. Ah! I am a romantic and come apart in any language, Dakini-tongued, a twilight mix between human realm and bursting invisible energy play. It plays in all the subatomic languages, in all the quarks, bones, and relics, and wishes this planet to be ever, always vibrating, even as it spins out, self-existing, bitter, sweet. This planet says, touch me, I am hot. Or cold. I can be whatever you imagine. This planet says, see the ever-present changing fallacy duality in all your worldly merchandise and battle. No more war, it says. Can't you hear me? I'm a fragment of the guru's humming mind. This is a little poem for Bernadette Mayer, who's one of our guest faculty this week, entitled 40 Mays for Bernadette. So crazy as to melt and dissolve all rage, unbreak clasp of mind, put cramps into planisphere. She's the victory utopian, heard about and written of in Chinese shoes. She's repaid some debts. Her tyrannic power we love like sky arrears, but tears still draw from her spigot. She consumes the word and is empress at typewriter, also crone whose fiery spirit abounds in middle age. Not resist, put forth this perfection headlong into shades of epic speech and love. This is entitled Lethe, after the poet H.D., whom we celebrated here at the summer writing program during the Objectivist Conference. Homage to H.D. Lethe, and the poet mentioned here, Edwin Denby, was a great teacher, master, poet, and wonderful dance critic. Nor child painted sick, nor other rocking motion, nor love's cool anger in pretty room, nor woman's lonely station, nor cold winter maturest fears, button up, nor New York City's toys, nor Edwin Denby to disagree, nor wealth, fame, mother to blanket me. Never kisses penetrate the grieving marrow. You sleep through the night, but for this sweet widow pills, tiny hexagonal portals to oblivion. A sonnet, O Husband. O husband, this word of careborn and possible serenity, of kinship, of intimation of property, you husband me, do I wife you? Is this a marriage of roles and names? If husband, you I should honor or obey, and if I don't, what recourse? To break asunder, let it be a marriage of bottom nature between two stable points, the heaven of you, the earth of me. Or is it insult heaped on insult to stretch the boundary? Don't rage or jealous be when I enjoin to you the true, most stretched heart of me, me who is less solid being than ever want inclined to be. But that's the truth of it, as through meditation and poetry we see, and as I am woman, I'm empty, yet full of light for thee. Titled One Taste. Long, 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 long to get to. Long, long, oh, long it took to get you. A long time on it, one taste. The tongue flickering about like some demon's or forked two directions, ten directions. Long, long, long it took to get to. Long, long, oh, long it took to get you. One taste. I turn my back on you in tyranny mode, hinged by very thin wire, precarious stirring from heart to gut to cervix, riding in the getaway car, spilling the mescal drink as libation on the path. I said about the muffler, it was expendable, not really but loud, like my expendable fear, exposed and raw. The night is warm. Turn my back to strip and run up back door mountain naked in the body sense. I do turn my back on you. Run to embrace that mountain. Beware the cactus underfoot and prick the intent to pierce me and turn it around. Get to the ground to chase a mad demon over the fence or knock him to pavement. And was that person in the sense of that taste of pavement chalky and hot and kissing the ground, but not that you walk upon. Long, long, it took long to get to down on ground. Bending over, I taste the spring leaf, slightly bitter chip of wood. Needles of the forest stung my face as I sunk into you and was the mother of my world. Oh, tear it out of me. The child's mouth is sweet like melon as he kisses me, or moist as inner secret of anything. I turn to face him. Face me, mama, face me, mama, face me, mama, and not turn over in your spermy marriage bed. I turn forward to the sun and am always facing east now to behold his shining face and draw my hands up to shield his eyes. Which taste now, domestic light, towel jammed in closet, plastic He-Man bending over to humble himself on wet tile. Which taste now, reach up now, reach up long, long, it took so long, it took so long to embrace you. He grows like the expectant lover I turn my back on. Tear it out of me. Long, long, long enough. Rub together the deceptive existence of me and other. Tear you out of me. You exist because you do not exist other. I taste my hand, all two of them. Salty. And extend to the mountain and to the sea. And of my crackpot nation, what of it? And of my anticipation, what of it? It waits, and the little village I pass through, is it still there? And of my wiles, can you see them? And of my purse, it falters. And of my tolerance, it anticipates impatient. And of my fist raised in protest, it aggravates the lady next to me, perhaps. Who is she? And of my cowlick, it is energetic. And of my smile, it is for you only. And of my sob, it is the taste of the sea leaning against the sand. long, 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 long. I took a long, long time on it. So taste me now. Lineage poem for Frank O'Hara, maybe a poet some of you know. This summer is an anniversary of his death. This is called A Phone Call from Frank O'Hara. That all these dyings may be life in death. I was living in San Francisco. My heart was in Manhattan. It made no sense, no reference point. Hearing the sad horns at night, fragile evocations of female stuff. The three tones, the last most resonant, were like warnings, haiku musings at dawn. The call came in the afternoon. Frank, is that really you? I'd awake chilled at dawn in the wooden house like an old ship, stay bundled through the day, sitting on the stoop to catch the sun. I lived near the park whose deep green over my shoulder made life cooler. Was my spirit faltering, grown duller? I want to be free of poetry's ornaments, its duty, free of constant irritation, me in it. What was grander reason for being? Do it. Why? Why, Frank? To make the energies dance, etc. My coat, a cape of horrors. I'd walk through town of impending earthquake. Was that it? Ominous days. Street shiny with hallucinatory light on sad dogs. Too many religious people. Or a woman startled me by her look of indecision near the empty stadium. I walked back, spooked by my own darkness. Then Frank called to say, what? Not done complaining yet? Can't you smell the eucalyptus? Have you never neared the Pacific? While Frank and Free call for music while your veins swell, he sang, quoting a metaphysician. Don't you know the secret? How to wake up and see you don't exist, but that does? Don't you see phenomena is so much more important than this? I always love that. Always, I cried, wanting to believe him. Yes, but say more. How can you if it's sad and dead? But that's just it. If it isn't, it doesn't want to be. Do you want to be? He was warming to his song. Of course, I don't have to put up with as much as you do these days, these years. But I do miss the color, the architecture, the talk. You know, it was the life. And dying is such an insult. After all, I was in love with breath, and I loved embracing those others, the lovers, with my body. He sighed and laughed. He wasn't quite as I'd remembered him, not less generous, but more abstract. Did he even have a voice now, I wondered, or did I think it up in the middle of this long day, phone in hand now, dialing Manhattan? Stephen? So I have two more pieces with Stephen. This is called Ice. You're like ice, you're like ice, you're like ice, you're like ice, you're like ice. You're like ice, you're like ice, you're like ice, you're like ice, you're like ice. Ice consistent, ice is iridescent, iconoclastic ice. Monastic ice, Islamic ice, interesting ice flow. Ice be mine, ice be mine. You're like ice, you're like ice, you're like ice, you're like ice, you're like ice. Insulated ice. Ice inventory, make more ice. Ice is nice, ice age woman. Ice touch, ice you do me in. You're like ice, ice.
Vintage ice, dog on ice, indomitable ice. Vacant ice, ichnology, ice recount. Ice retail, fast melting ice, when spring comes it melts. You're like ice, you're like ice, you're like ice, you're like ice, you're like ice. Feisty ice, marry ice, hold tight, entice. You're like ice. This is Bardo Corridor. Well, I had my ego and 2 grams of hash, sat down in a corridor, sat down in a spook-like corridor, in a roofful space, in a jewel-tight box corridor, in a city night space corridor, in a creature corridor, corridor, a pyramid, dream power. Well, I had my ego and 2 grams of hash, sat down in a Toltec corridor, in a farewell medicine dance corridor, in a swift dust storm corridor, in a subatomic plenum corridor, in a Bardo corridor, roar, 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 roar. Well, I had my ego in a wounded heart, sat down in the angriest Bedouin's corridor, in the hard-hearted Contra corridor, in a slum landscape tenement corridor, in a demon taking my breath away corridor, in a blazing war-scarred corridor. Well, I had my ego in 2 grams of hash, sat down in a sinking sun corridor, in a neurological pain corridor, in a bright life corridor, in a corridor of Bardo dream power. Well, I had my ego in an aspiring heart, sat down in a Buddha field corridor, in a Prashya Paramita corridor, in a Bodhisattva's endless continuum corridor, corridor of Bardo dream power. Well, I had my ego in an aspiring heart, sat down in a rising in the east woman corridor, and I have never slept that way corridor, in a single-minded corridor, in a scepter of the deities corridor, in transcend this passion corridor, in a wrathful mantra corridor, in a wearing out the syllables corridor, in a Bardo corridor, roar, 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 roar.
Stephen Taylor, musician, composer, urban minstrel, songwriter, poet, bibliophile. He has toured as an accompanist with Alan for the last 12 years. From 1980 to 83, he wrote orchestral arrangements for singer Judy Collins. He's composed and orchestrated and co-produced music for an album of song poems with Kenward Elmsley. More recently, or I think since 1984, as a member of the Fugs, he's performed in New York and on tour in Europe. In the next few months, Stephen Taylor will accompany the Fugs and be playing in Poland, rocking Warsaw. For now, he's right here, Stephen Taylor. Excuse me, I got a frog in my throat. Here's a new one. Here's a new one. If the air conditioner doesn't blow it away, I might get through it. It's called The Woman in the Moon, and it's about Diana. Woman in the lights. Dark star wheels across the sky, bringing summer in.
and with the shrill cicada's cry, the dithyramb begins. The love song of the nightingale, the laughter of the loon. Music of the living night to the woman in the moon. She is leader at the dance, a movement like a flame. Her home is on the mountaintop, Diana is her name. I burned before when I had not seen, now I'll burn till the crack of doom. Howling in a wilderness at the woman in the moon. Jets trail across the sunset, lit by an orange glow. I'll never know how we went wrong or why you had to go. Sometimes I dream I could fly to you, but I always wake up too soon.
Sing a TV commercial. I travel around. I play colleges occasionally, and there's a lot of ROTC on campuses, and there's a lot of TV commercials in asking people to join the Army. So one of the guys I work with wrote this tune to an old folk tune called "Dark as the Dungeon." It's called "It's Just Like a Jail." Come all ye young people, so fine and so free, seek not your future in the U.S. Army. It's like a junk habit, it creeps into your soul, till the gleam of your mind goes as black as the coal. Well, it's cramped as a prison and cruel as the gun. The dangers are many and the pleasures are none. Where the laughter is bitter, and the song's never free. Oh, it's just like a jail in the U.S. Army. They'll tell you enlist, say it's better than the draft. We'll teach you a trade, but killing is their craft. The sergeants will taunt you, the officers smile. Human kindness will leave you after a while. Well, it's cramped as a prison and cruel as the gun. The dangers are many and the pleasures are none. Oh, where the laughter is bitter and the song's never free. Oh, it's just like a jail in the U.S. Army.
Thank you.
King of expansive poetics, Lord of big breath, long line poetry, international celebrity poet, good old boy from New Jersey, author of Howl, Caddish, Planet News, Fall of America, Mind Breaths, Plutonium Ode, Collected Poems by Harper and Row, White Shroud, The Annotated Hell. Co-founder of the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics. A Guggenheim Fellow, member of the American Institute of Arts and Letters. Our Bodhisattva Santa Claus, beard getting whiter every year, Allen Ginsberg.
First song I ever wrote, and conclude with the last song I ever wrote. The first, 1948, a Western ballad. When I died, love, when I died, my heart was broken. In your care, I never suffered love so fair as now I suffer and abide. When I died, love, when I died, when I died, love, when I died, I wandered in an endless maze that men have walked for centuries, as endless as the gate was wide. When I died, love, when I died, when I died, love, when I died, there was a war in the upper air. All that happens happened there. There was an angel at my side. When I died, love, when I died.
A poem written November 16th, 1984, in China, a part of a series of poems based on dream encounters called Visiting Father and Friends. I climbed up the hillside to the lady's house. There was Gregory Corso dressed as a velvet ape, japing and laughing, elegant-handed, tumbling somersaults and consulting with the hostess, girls and wives familiar, feeding him like a baby. He looked healthy, remarkable energy, up all night talking jewelry, winding his watches, hair over his eyes, jumping from one apartment to another. Neil Cassidy, rosy-faced, indifferent and affectionate, entertaining himself in company far from China, back in the USA, old 1950s, 1980s, still kicking his way through the city, up Riverside Drive without a car. He hugged me back and turned attention to the night ladies appearing, disappearing in the bar, in apartments and streets, continuing jackanapes, wasting his time and everybody else's, but mysterious, maybe up to something good, keep us all from committing more crimes, political wars or peace protests, angrier than war's cannonball noises. He needed a place to sleep. Then my father appeared, lone, lorn, and healthy, still living by himself, in an apartment a block up the hill from Peter's ancient habitual pad. I hadn't noticed where he lived now. Somehow it obliterated his home condition from my mind. Took it for granted, never curious enough to visit. But, as I had no place to go tonight, wondering why I'd not visited him recently at home, asked him if I could spend the night in bed down there with him in his pad with bedroom and bathroom, a giant Jewish residence apartment on Riverside Drive that refugees inhabited, driven away from Europe by Hitler, where my father lived. I entered. He showed me his bed and told me to get comfortable. I slept the night, but woke when he shifted his sleeping pad closer to mine. I got up from bed. He slept badly on a green-inch-thick, dusty foam rubber plastic mattress I'd thrown out years ago. Poor cold mat upon the concrete cellar floor. So that was it. He'd given me his bed for my comfort. No, no, I said, take back your bed. Sleep comfortable, weary, you deserve it. Amazing, you still get around. I'm sorry I hadn't visited before, just didn't know where you lived. Here you are, a block up street from Peter, hospitable to me and Gregory and girlfriends of the night, old, sweet, bohemian heart. Don't sleep on the floor like that. I'll take your place on the mat and pass the night, okay? I went upstairs, happy to see he had a place for good, and woke in China, Peter alive, though drinking a problem. Neil was dead more years than my father Louis, no longer smiling alive. No wonder I'd not visited his place he'd retired to a decade ago. How good to see him home and take his fatherly hospitality for granted among the living and dead. Now to wash my face, dress in my suit on time, to go to classroom to teach poetry at 8 a.m. Beijing, far around the world from Louis' grave in Newark, New Jersey. Don't know how many were here for the conversation with R.D. Lang. How many were at this? Raise your hands. So the majority were not here. And there was a long poem that I read then that I like, so I'd like to read that again. Called I Went to the Movie of Life. Another of the series of dream meetings. In the mud, in the night, in Mississippi, Delta Roads, outside Clarksdale, I slogged along. The barber shop miles behind where I'd sang all night and took photographs while Wade Walton's razor strupped rhythmic. Harry Smith's cassette tapes rolled. Guitar whoops from the Jackson jukebox were recorded for mortal young ears years hence. Lights flashed under the trees. My black companion motioned, here they are, your company. Like giant rhinoceri with painted faces splashed all over side and snout, headlights glaring in the rain, one after another, buses rolled past us toward the Book Hotel boarding house up the hill town ahead. Accompanying me, two girls pitched in the dark slush garbage road, slipping in deep ruts wheels had left behind, sucking at their high heels. Staining granny dresses, sequined, magic marked with astral signs, head groupies who knew the way to this grateful dead half-century Red Rocks Heroes caravan pit stop for the night. I climbed mid-road, a toad hopped before my foot. I shrank aside, unthinking, kicked it off with leather shoe. Animal feet scurried back at my sight. A little monster on his back bled red. Nearby this prey, a lizard with large eyes retreated, and a rat curled tail and slithered in the mud wet to the dirt gutter, repelled. A long climb ahead. The girls would make it or not. I moved ahead, eager to rejoin old company. Merry pranksters with aged pride and peacocked feathered beds, shining mylar mirror paper walls, acid mothers with strobe-lit radios, long-haired men, gaunt 1960s diggers emerged from the night to rest, bathe, cook spaghetti, nurse their kids, smoke pipes and squat with Indian shade sages around charcoal braziers in their cars. Profound American dreamers. I was in their company again after long years, byways, alone, looking for lovers in bar, street, country towns, and sunlit cities, rain or shine, snow and spring bud backyard brick walls, ominous adventures behind the Iron Curtain. Were we all grown old? I looked for my late boyfriends dancing to electric blues with their guns and smoke round jukebox walls. The smell of hash and country ham, old newspaper media stars wandering room to room, Pentagon refugee Ellsberg, old dove David Dellinger bathing in an iron tub with a patch in his stomach wall, Abby Hoffman here explaining the natural strategy of city political saint works, Quicksilver Messenger musicians, Berkeley orators with their half-grown children in socks, dirty faces, alcohol uncles who played chess and strummed banjos frayed by broken fingernails. Where's Ken Kesey? Away tonight in another megalopolis hosting hypnosis parties for Hell's Angels? Maybe he ought to nail them down on a stage or radio. Neil must be tending his daughters in Los Gatos, pacifying his wife, coming down on amphetamines in his bedroom or downers to sleep this night away and wake for work in the Great Bay Carnival tented among smokestacks and railroad tracks and freeways under the box house urban hills. Young movie stars with grizzled beards pass through bus corridors looking for Bob Dylan in the movie office, re-staggering through old roles. Recorded words now sung familiarly in Leningrad and Shanghai. Their wives in tortoiseshell glasses and paisley shawls and towels, tending cauldrons bubbling with spaghetti sauce and racks of venison, squirrel, or lamb, ovens open with hot rhubarb pies. Who should I love? Here, one with leather hat, blonde hair, strong body, middle age, face frowned in awful thought, beer in hand by the bathroom wall. That digger boy I knew with a giant phallus, bald head studying medicine, walked by, preoccupied with his anatomy homework, rolling a joint, his thick fingers at his chest, eyes downcast on paper and tobacco. One by one, I checked out love companions, none whose beauty stayed my heart. This place was tired of my adoration. They knew my eyes too well. No one I could find to give me bed tonight and wake me grinning, naked, with eggs scrambled for breakfast ready, oatmeal, grits, or hot spicy sausages at noon assembly when I open my eyelids out of dream. I wandered, walking room to room through psychedelic buses, wanting to meet someone new, younger than this crowd of wily, wrinkled wanderers with their booze and families, electronic arts and crafts, wool-lined brows of chemical genius music producers, adventurous politicians, singing ladies and earthly paramours playing rare parts in the final movie of a generation. The cameras rolled and followed me. Was I the central figure in this film? We'd passed dark-starred crossroads and risen over bridges. The ghost-lit caravan party of gypsy intellects had passed through the USA in front of an eye-recording visual tape better in celluloid. I'd known most faces and had guided the invisible cameras room to room, pausing at candlelit bus windows on flooded cotton fields we'd already seen by daylight. Familiar stars wandering by coal stoves, public headline artists known from Rolling Stone and New York Times, actors and actresses from living theater, gaunt-faced and eloquent with lifted hands and bony fingers greeting me on my way to the bus driver's wheel, tattered dirty gloves on Neil's seat waiting his return from working the National Railroad, young kids I had taught saluting me wearily from worn couches as I passed bus to bus, cameras moving behind me. What was my role? I hardly knew these faded heroes, friendly strangers so long on the road. I'd been out teaching in Boulder, Manhattan, Budapest, London, Warsaw, Brooklyn, so long. Why follow me through these amazing further bus party reunion corridors tonight? Or is this movie or real? If I turn around to face the camera, I'd break the scene, dissolve the plot illusion. Or is it illusion, or art, or just my life? Were cameras ever there? The picture flowed so evenly before my eyes. How could a crew follow me invisible, still, and smoothly noiseless, bus to bus, from room to room along the caravan's painted labyrinth? This wasn't cinema, and I, no hero spokesman documenting friendship scenes, only myself alone, lost in the cabin, with familiar strangers still looking for some sexual angel for mortal delights. No different from haunting St. Mark's Boys Bar again, solitary in a tie and jacket and gray beard, wallet in my pocket full of cash and cards, useless. A glimmer of light in the curtained doorway before me. My heart leapt forward to the orgy room. All youth, lithe and hairless, smooth-skinned, white buttocks, ankles, young men's nippled chests lit behind the curtain, thighs entwined in the male area, the place I was looking for behind my closed eyelids all this night. I pushed my hand into the room, moving aside the curtain that shimmered with bright with naked knees, face and shoulders pale in candlelight, entered the pleasure chamber's empty door, silver shadows glimmering reflected on the silver curtained veil, eyelids still dazzling as their adolescent limbs, intangible dissolved where I put my hand into a vacant room, laid down on the dark floor to watch the lights of phantom arms pulsing across closed eyelids, conscious as I woke in bed, returned at dawn to New York, wood-slatted Venetian blinds over the windows on East 12th Street in my white painted room. Jacket blurb for book by Nanao, poems by Nanao Sakaki, written with Peter Orlovsky. Brain washed by numerous mountain streams, legs clean after walking four continents, eyes cloudless as Kagoshima sky, fresh, raw, surprisingly cooked heart, tongue live as a spring salmon, Nanao's hands are steady, axe and pen sharp as old stars. This also, the title and the last line are the last phrasings from a dream. I woke with the verse and then tried to figure out how the rest of the poem had come to conclude with that verse, and so I had to improvise till I found an opening to write the last line, which is the title. I noticed the sea. I noticed the music. I wanted to dance. I noticed the grass. I noticed the hills. I noticed the highways. I noticed the dirt road. I noticed the cars and roads in the parking lot. I noticed the ticket takers. I noticed the cash and the checks and the cards. I noticed the buses. I noticed the mourners. I noticed their children in red dresses. I noticed the highway. Noticed the retreat houses. Noticed the flags. Noticed the devotees. Noticed their trucks and buses. Noticed their guards in khaki uniforms. I noticed the crowds. Noticed the misty skies. Noticed the all-pervading smiles and empty eyes. I noticed the pillows colored red and yellow, square pillows and round. I noticed the gate. I noticed the namastes. Noticed the parade of men and women. Noticed the procession. Noticed the bagpipe. Noticed the drum, the horns. Noticed the high head dresses and saffron robes. Noticed the three-piece suits. I noticed the palanquin. Noticed the umbrella. Noticed the stupa. Noticed the painted jewels, the colors of the four directions. Notice the amber for generosity. Notice the green for karmic works. Notice the white for Buddha. Notice the red for the heart. I noticed the 13 worlds on the stupa hat. I noticed the bell handle and umbrella. Notice the empty head of the bell. Notice the corpse to be set in the head of the bell. Notice the monks chanting, horns in our ears, smoke rising from the top of the fire brick empty bell. Notice the crowds quiet. Notice the Chilean poet. Noticed the rainbow. I noticed the guru was dead. I noticed his teacher bare-breasted watching a corpse burn in the stupa. Noticed the morning students sat cross-legged before their books, chanting devotional mantras. I noticed them performing mysterious gestures with their fingers. Noticed the bells and brass thunderbolts in their hands. I noticed the flame rising above the flags and wires and umbrellas and painted orange poles. I noticed the sky. I noticed the sun, a rainbow round the sun. I noticed the light, misty clouds drifting over the sun. I noticed my own heart beating, my breath passing through my nostrils, my feet walking, my eyes seeing, my brain noticing the smoke from the corpse-fired monument. I noticed a path down the hill. I noticed the crowd moving toward the buses. I noticed the food, the lettuce salad. I noticed the teacher was absent. I noticed my friends. I noticed our car, the blue Volvo. I noticed the young boy who held my hand. I noticed our key in the motel door. I noticed the darkness, noticed a dream and forgot. I noticed the oranges and lemons and caviar at breakfast. I noticed the highway, my sleepiness, my thoughts of homework, the boy's nippled chest in the breeze as the car passed down hillside and past green woods to the water. I noticed the houses, the balconies overlooking a misted Atlantic horizon, the shore and the old worn rocks in the sand. I noticed the sea. I noticed the music. I wanted to dance. The last, also a collaboration with poet, musician Stephen Taylor, written September 12, 1986, at Warsaw Airport, waiting a plane to lift off after we were a month in Yugoslavia and Poland. How's your voice?
What happened?
I got a sore throat. I was sitting behind, just got a sore throat.
Mine is okay, I think. Right. Europe, who knows? All over Europe, people are saying, who knows? Who knows? Asphodel's fine, but next year, what comes with the rose? Cabbage smells good, but depends which way the wind blows. All over Europe, people are saying, who knows, who knows? Wormwood skies'll poison the sea, revelation. From Oslo to Athens, black clouds have enlightened the nations. Cesium mushrooms and milk may mutate the creation. All over Europe, people are saying, who knows, who knows? Woke up in Poland, maple leaves just wilted down. Not a cloud in the sky, inexplicably cold on the ground. Kids in the yard were playing without any clothes. All over Europe, people were saying, who knows, who knows? Phoned up the doctor, official reply, never mind. Same afternoon, suggested we take iodine. 3 days later, Chernobyl's error disclosed. All over Europe, people were saying, who knows, who knows? Slaughtered the reindeer in Lapland, laps on the dole. Camembert radioactive in Zurich, the gold. In the Cotswolds of England, all the sheep markets were closed. All over Europe, people were saying, who knows, who knows? If a liter of water's one X-ray in Washington State. So in milk bars of Minsk, what does it cost a milkshake? Big apples this year, we still have to eat up what grows. If we didn't eat poison, we'd starve, brother, everyone knows.